The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrot. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life. You know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Hi, everyone. It's Sophia. Welcome to Work in Progress. Welcome back to Work in Progress. Friends, I am elated to be joined by an actor, producer, and activist who I look up to so much today. David Oyelowo is here on the podcast. David was born in Oxfordshire, England, to Nigerian parents. He grew up in South London and then moved back to Lagos, Nigeria at the age of 6, where he lived until he was 13 before going back to London again. He studied acting at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art and then rose to stardom in his stage performance as King Henry VI in the Royal Shakespeare Company's 2001 productions of Shakespeare's trilogy of plays about the king. Many of you probably know him for his incredible performance as Martin Luther King Jr. in the film Selma in 2014. His resume since is nothing short of incredible, but what is really the most inspiring to me about David is his leadership scholarship for girls. In his home country, Nigeria, David saw a problem and decided he wanted to get to work on fixing it. Nigeria has approximately 20 million children out of school, 60% of whom are girls. That's over 12 million girls, making it the highest number in Africa and the second highest in the world. A frightening majority of young school-age girls become victims of terrorism and gender inequality. And after the 2016 kidnapping of school-age girls by Boko Haram, David knew he wanted to get involved in being part of the solution. The scholarship program he launched covers full tuition, room and board, health insurance, social and emotional support, leadership development, independent academic assessments, workplace skill development, and more. They do incredible work supporting girls in Nigeria. Their first year, they started with 7 students, and they're currently working with 45 girls in 4 different places across the country. And his goals for growing the program and working toward gender equality in his home country are nothing short of inspiring. So let's get to it. I love to start when people come and join me on the show because everyone tends to be promoting something wonderful. And I know you have something wonderful to talk about, but we're still on strike. So we'll talk about it when the strike ends.
Yeah.
But there's so much wonderful work. Exactly. There's so much wonderful work you do also, you know, not just on screen, but off screen, your advocacy, you know, so much of what you spend your time and platform promoting that I'm excited to talk about. But I like to go back and meet my guests before you became household names. Right. And so if we were to rewind and meet a young David, say at 8 or, you know, 9 years old, what were you up to? Where were you living? What were you passionate about as a little boy?
Wow, that's a great way in. At 8 and 9, I was living in Lagos, Nigeria. I was actually born in the UK, but age 6, we moved back to Nigeria, which is where my parents were from. And at that time, I was at St. Saviour's Primary School. And I was a very precocious young kid, very inquisitive, very artistic. And there was a real tension for me because I was very artistic, but Nigerian culture generally is very academic heavy. So I could feel already my parents' desire for me to be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. That's pretty typical for a Nigerian family, any immigrant family, really. I could feel that pressure beginning to rise up. And my dad was my hero. So I kind of wanted to do anything I could to please him. So I think my 9-year-old self was sort of enjoying being someone who loved drawing and painting, and I loved doing plays, but it always felt trivial compared to, you know, academia, which I was good at, but I wasn't as passionate about as the artistic stuff. So that was the tension going on for me at that at that time. And I'm the eldest of 3 sons. I think I spent more time than I care to admit bullying my brothers. not too intensely, but I was very keen on establishing my alpha status.
Right. You were the first pancake. You really needed to establish dominance.
That's unfortunately, I've grown to learn better. At that time, I was definitely that kind of kid.
Yeah, that feels fair. My best friend has 2 younger siblings and I'm an only. Right. So I never really had the dynamic, but she always jokes that, you know, she was in charge. The first pancake joke is hers. I have to credit her. And she's like, you know, yeah, I was in charge. I had the most rules, but I was also the one they had to figure it all out on.
Right.
She talks about how the younger ones sort of got to benefit from the systems you helped to set up in your family, I'm sure.
That's a definite dynamic that I experienced as a kid and definitely as a parent as well. I would categorize what my younger brother, especially my youngest brother, was experienced was being spoilt compared to me being very, very much kept in line. You know, soon after my 9-year-old self, I ended up going to a boarding school at age 11. And it was a military style boarding school, pretty intense. And they did not shy away from a good caning if you didn't walk within the margins. And that is not unusual in Nigeria at all, or certainly wasn't then. But I was a pretty naughty kid. It was a mixed boarding school, and I have to admit to sneaking into the girls' dorms now and again, and not to do anything crazy. It was more this sounds so lechy in a kind of a 2023 context, but my friends and I would there were a row of windows where the girls would be having their showers, and I have to admit that we would go and feast our eyes. It was a terrible thing to do. If my children did the same thing, I'd have something to say. But yeah, it was I was a naughty kid. I needed that cane, and it certainly yeah. brought me back into line.
So was that how you wound up going to boarding school in the first place, or was that a decision that you made? I don't know anyone who ever went to a boarding school, so I'm sort of fascinated by the whole culture of it.
Yeah. It was, you know, I wasn't like a naughty, naughty kid, but my parents worked very hard. You know, they were at work a lot. And I think for them, I was the only one of my three brothers that did go to boarding school. And I think it was one less kid for them to have to sort of juggle in the midst of being both full-time working parents. But also, my parents spent virtually every cent they made on the best possible education we could be afforded. And it was one of the best schools in Nigeria at the time. And my brothers were going to some of the best primary schools. And so it was more that. It was more what are the best schools? They happened to be boarding schools because affluent Nigerians could send their kids there from all over the country. And so we actually were didn't have much money, but I ended up going to school with some of the richer kids in Nigeria. So it was a weird sort of schizophrenic upbringing of being around quite affluent kids, but going home in my holidays to a two-bedroom apartment with my parents and my three brothers, who were doing everything they could to keep us in these schools.
Well, and it's interesting that you talk about just a few years before this, knowing that you loved art and storytelling and being curious about plays. Did any of the sort of spectrum of what you got to see, you know, in your neighborhood versus what I'm sure some of these really wealthy kids' experiences looked like, did that feel a bit like character study to you?
Yeah, I think I didn't realize it, that I was internalizing so much of what I saw everywhere I went, but also because my parents were at work so much, the television was my nanny to a certain extent. And so I was watching so many TV shows, a lot of them from the UK or from America that were happened to be on Nigerian television. And so I was kind of raised by both American and British television in Nigeria. And Nigeria is an incredibly intense and vibrant place. And so you are literally thrust into the most spicy and intoxicating and invigorating soup of humanity, in a sense. But I also, unlike black kids or even older, now that I'm older, what happened to me was because I was in Nigeria during some of my formative years and everyone around me looked like me, I also didn't have what I would call a minority mentality. Everyone around me, there was affluence, there was poverty, there was the complete spectrum of humanity. I didn't have that thing that I definitely did when we came back to the UK of going, oh, I'm black and I'm not on posters or magazines or front and center in the stories I'm seeing on TV. And I am, and this was subconscious. It wasn't like conscious, but I was suddenly in environments where everything was telling me that someone like me is on the periphery. Whereas living in Nigeria, everyone was at the center of their own lives.
Yeah.
And so that definitely informed how I carried myself, what the estimation of what I thought I could go on to achieve was. And then it was quite a culture shift moving back to the UK age 13, where that was definitely not the case.
Yeah, and such formative years for you too. I mean, to move from the UK to Nigeria at six and then be there from 6 to 13. And then in that, you know, teenage experience where you really do begin to shift into young adulthood to go back, did it feel like a culture shock?
It was a massive, massive culture shock on so many levels, because even though my parents were not affluent, I had been going to these very, very posh schools. And then we were suddenly in the UK where financially they could not support anything of that. So we actually, my mom and I, and my three brothers, we moved back to London. My dad remained in Nigeria because he had to finish his contract at his workplace for another 4 years. And we were living in a halfway house. We were sort of in a hostel type of situation while we were waiting for housing. And it was just two rooms and my mom and my three brothers. And we were going to state schools. So suddenly not that level of affluence. And also kids who were talking back to the teachers. And I mean, things that were just unthinkable in the environment that I had been in. Also, I'm from a royal family in Nigeria. So even though we weren't particularly wealthy, my uncles were politicians and doctors and lawyers. And we lived on Oyelowo Street, on the family compound for a time. Wow. So there were things like that, that suddenly you're thrust into the UK. And some of it was familiar because I'd been born in the UK, but a lot of it was very, very, very different, including the weather. So it was a culture shock that took me quite a while to get over. But, you know, get over it, I did.
And now a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver. Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
And in the midst of all of this, you have to tell your family you want to be an actor. So when I'm curious when it happened for you, because I remember for me, you know, my family came to the US from Italy on a boat. And there was a lot of that, you know, they settled, they came through Ellis Island, they settled on the East Coast. And there was a lot of that, you know, big, loud Italian energy in my family where, you know, my Uncle Raymond's like, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a lawyer or a doctor. Like, that was kind of it. And then I eventually was like, I think I want to be an artist. And I remember that. When did you work up the courage? Because it took me until it was time to apply to college to say anything to my family.
Right. Yeah, it was incremental for me. I mean, as I said, I pushed that side of myself away. Even though I loved it, it never occurred to me that I would do it professionally. So at some point I was just going to knuckle down and be a lawyer, but I was doing youth theater and I was doing my sculptures and my paintings and my pencil drawings. And that was all the stuff I really wanted to do. And television, as I say, was such a catalyst for me. There was this show called LA Law. You know, there was this Black lawyer in the middle of the show, and I was just so drawn to him, and because he was the conflation of the two things that he was what my dad wanted me to do and what I subconsciously wanted to do, which was the acting component. So I became obsessed with that show. But continued my quest towards going. So I would say to everyone, I was going to be a lawyer, but then, you know, I fell hard for this girl at church who didn't even know I existed. And one day she invited me on what I thought was a date, but it was actually to join a youth theater at the National Theater in London. And I didn't realize this until I walked into the room and there were all these young people doing the crazy warm-ups and all stuff that was completely alien to me. And I thought we were going to see a play. I was quite shy. I kept going because I liked the girl. And then I really caught the bug at that youth theater. And I had got into Oxford Brookes University to do a law degree. This is the schizophrenic nature of this. I took a gap year after high school and I went to art school. I went to the Guildhall School of Art in London.
No way!
But I was still supposed to be going to go and do law. But in that gap year, I bumped into my theater studies teacher, who I'd had at high school, and she said something to me that changed my life. She said, and this was outside a train station, I literally bumped into her in the street. She said, David, I wouldn't say this to every student that I have had, but I think you really should consider becoming a professional actor. And it completely threw me because I had enjoyed doing youth theater. In fact, she had helped me get into something called the National Youth Music Theater, which is where I actually met the lovely lady I eventually went on to marry. We were 17 and 18 when we met. So she had helped me with that. I had loved it, but still, I didn't think that this is what I would do professionally. But then she helped me with my auditions and applications for drama school, all of which I did secretly away from my parents. And I got into the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts on a scholarship because there was no way I was going to be able to pay to go. And miraculously, I had this scholarship. And so that was the moment of truth. I had to go to my dad, who knew I was supposed to be going to Oxford Brookes University to do law, and say, this thing has happened. So I'll never forget going to him and saying, Daddy, I have something to tell you. He said, what is it? I said, I'm going to go to drama school instead. And he went, what is drama school? I said, well, it's a place, I want to be an actor. You want to go and be a court jester? I was just like, no, it's not a school for court jesters. It's I'm going to be an actor. And the thing was, and I didn't realize it at the time, there were so few representatives of true success on television or in films for my parents to go, oh, so you're going to be in, because Sidney Poitier and Denzel Washington, that was pie in the sky stuff. That's not going to be us on a council estate in North London. That's not the trajectory. So it was just like that's not going to happen. What are you talking about? But the one thing that caught his attention was the scholarship. And I said, but I've got this scholarship. But, scholarship. We can tell everyone you are a scholar. So that was the thing. As long as he had something he could show off to his friends about. So I ended up doing 3 years of drama school at Lambda. And they just kept on thinking, well, okay, now you're going to do a proper job. Are you now going to go to law school or whatever? I went, no, like this is now what I'm going to be doing. And it wasn't until I, about 2 or 3 years after I'd graduated from drama school, I got to play Henry VI in the Royal Shakespeare Company production of those plays. And my dad, who had suffered a lot of racism in the UK, he had first come to the UK in the 60s and 70s, and he just couldn't get his head around the fact that any black man was playing the King of England and that it was his son. And that was the day beyond which he became my number one fan. You couldn't talk to him without him just boring you to death with my acting. And so that was the turning point.
That's so amazing. What a cool experience to get to have with your family. And oh gosh, I also think your point about representation, how we see each other or see ourselves in these spaces, really can shift your whole experience. And to think about what you got to see and didn't get to see for yourself as a young man, you know, the significance of the character on LA Law, the significance of this experience at the Royal Shakespeare Company for your father, it, the ripple effect that goes sort of back and forward generationally when people take up space and change other people's experience in that space is so profound.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about something. I remember reading this, you know, years ago. I loved the boldness of it. And while the experience is different, I remember feeling like, honestly, I was like, yeah, I love that he said that. I had this sort of exclamation because you talked, I mean, it's got to be almost 10 years ago now. You said, you know, you don't want to be sent scripts if the role is the best friend who's black.
Right.
And I remember thinking like, that's exactly how I feel. I'm so sick of being sent scripts for the girlfriend.
Right.
Like, why can't I be my own person as a woman? Why do I only exist if I'm in a relationship on screen with a man? Mm-hmm. And you making that statement in your experience as a black man and who you get to be, what roles you get to embody on screen. I loved the frankness of it and I loved the boldness of it. And it's so hard because I want to talk about things you've done since then, but we're not allowed to talk about our work on strike. So I'm trying to figure out how to ask you questions without details. but I am curious in the, you know, nearly a decade since that interview, when you've done all of these things, these unbearably beautiful roles in your career, do you feel the same way? Do you feel like the things you've been able to say and do have helped shift the industry for you? You know, how do you look back at that beginning and where you sit today as an actor and the way you do get to represent yourself?
Yeah, thank you so much for acknowledging that, you know, for us as actors, especially when you're at the beginning of your career, you can often feel that your existence, your success, your ascendancy is very much predicated on not being seen to be what could be deemed to be problematic in relation to...
Don't rock the boat.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Don't rock the boat. Don't have a false sense of yourself. But I've had that from day one. You know, leaving drama school, I remember meeting agents and saying, I want to go up for roles that are not just race specific. Mm-hmm. I want to be considered for the roles that white actors are going up for, because at that time, and to a certain extent, even now, they would often have more dimension because they were being written as front and center. They were being written as important, as complex, as aspirational, inspirational. Mm-hmm. And there was less, way less of that if it was centered around a specifically black character. So outside of being able to create those roles for myself in a world where I was still, before I decided that producing and creating the kind of things I would want to be in was something that at my disposal, my way of handling that was to say, okay, for me, when I get out of bed every day, the first thought I have is not, I am a black man, how am I going to go out into the world and do black things? That is just not. I am a human being. I am complicated, complex. I am multifaceted. I am good and bad and everything in between. And I want to be able to mirror humanity back to itself in ways that I understand as a human being. Mm. And so the way to do that at that point in my career was to say, do not think of me as a quote unquote black actor. And there were agents who laughed at me. Literally, I had an agent who I said that to, who was just like, they stipulate. And what am I going to put you up for an 11-year-old girl? He was sort of playing dumb. Oh, he knew exactly what I meant. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was a status quo. And that, to my point earlier, is the danger of sort of being forthright about what you want to do. But I stuck to my guns. I found an agent who believed in my perspective, or was at least to go on that ride with me. And that's what led to me playing Henry VI at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and doing projects that were not race specific. Because even though I now have the words to put to it now that I didn't have then, but the fact of the matter is I had a knowing then, and I have it absolutely now, that you cannot be what you cannot see.
Yes.
And I am a big believer in being part of the solution, not part of the problem. And so therefore I refused to accept stereotypical caricature roles that I felt continued to denigrate what I personally would want to see as representations of black men on screen. Mm-hmm. And so I would only participate in projects where complexity, transcendency, inspiration, aspiration, all of those things that I see. And this is where it's important in relation to my formative years in Nigeria. I saw that growing up. So it was something I knew was real. Mm-hmm. Even though the society I was now living in the UK, for some reason, was not necessarily showing that to me in a pervasive way. And I knew that I had to be part of the solution. And so, you know, I constantly and till today gravitate towards those kinds of stories. And as I continue to build my career, I butted up against the fact that there is resistance to those kind of stories being told. And I think there is a fear around, I hate this phrase because actually black and brown people are the global majority, but what I guess we would call minorities, there's a sort of fear about seeing them front and center or being inspirational, or because it upsets the status quo of male, white, middle class, mm-hmm. apex predator transcendency. Mm-hmm. And so even if that is sometimes an unconscious bias, it's a bias all the same. Mm-hmm. And it's something to be fought. It's something to be challenged. It's something to be eroded because it's not reflective of the world we live in. And so it's absolutely crucial. This medium mm-hmm. that we are afforded the opportunity to be in has such enormous global impact. It's, you know, yes. it's the reason why ex-presidents have deals at certain companies that will remain nameless during yes. the strike. It's just such a globally important means of education, inspiration, mm-hmm. culture shifts. And, I have tasked myself with, you know, being additive and not erosive when it comes mm-hmm. to the things I choose to do.
I love that. And now a word from our sponsors. The new Starz series, Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
It's so important not to forget what a privilege our relative platforms are. And right. it's so interesting to me, you know, this idea that you're bringing up about what the realities of who we are as humans globally really are factually, statistically. And then you've got these very bizarre, as you said, sort of status quo experiences or illusions that people really want to hold on to. And even for me, I had a really wild moment with my therapist, who's my favorite person. I talk about him all the time. Trevor's my guy. And we had this conversation recently where I said something about like, well, who's ever had more permission, you know, blah, 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 than me? And he just said, but you don't. You've been raised in this same society that has told you what your value as a woman is, in an industry that's told you what your relative value is as a woman who's a certain kind of pretty per other people's opinion, who could service certain kind of characters in service of men on screen in certain kinds of ways. And I mean, he just broke this whole thing down for me. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And I forget, you know, that I got on my first TV show in the early aughts when tabloid media was at its prime and we were ripping apart women like Britney Spears, you know, for clickbait. And like, it's such a wild thing to realize the influence of a system. And even for me, by the way, as I'm only one proximal degree away from pale, male, and stale, you know, right. I was born as a white woman in America in the year I was, and still what I've experienced in terms of the upset that so many of those typical people in power have at a woman who is educated, political, outspoken, and whose entire mission is to burn down a white heteronormative patriarchy and go out here and be part of this beautiful global populace. And people are like, you are a nightmare. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Right.
I'd love to be a nightmare to you. You know, what are the rest of us going to go out here and do? And I get so excited when people set examples as you have, where you get to go and make beautiful work and you get to go and do inspirational art. And you're not nervous to say that there's a mission in it in every step of the way for you. It does take courage to do that. And so I guess I'm realizing in this moment, I want to say thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. And, look, the reality is that we are all products of our environment, including white men. If all you have been told your entire existence is that you are at the pinnacle of society in the world, and everything around you is evidence of that, you are that is going to inform your behavior. So, you know, I don't blame anyone for being a product of their environment, but where I draw the line is when that is now being wielded as a cudgel, when that is being wielded as a weapon to marginalize other people because of a false supremacist narrative that is just unequivocally problematic. You know, our industry, a lot of the people who run it are products of that environment. And the bias sometimes is not intentional. It's just inherent. And so I feel like my job, to a certain extent, is to highlight where we all have blind spots. I have blind spots as a man. You know, I've produced movies. I remember doing a film a while ago where this was a scene in a police station, and it took a woman on set to go, every cop in this police station is a guy. And it was a film set in South Central Los Angeles, and if you go into a police station there, there are black cops, white cops, female, male, there's the plethora. And for whatever reason, I don't know who made the choice, but none of us deemed it anything but right. And as a producer on that on that film, I felt terrible. I was like, oh my gosh, stop. Everything stops. I don't care what it takes. where we're going to be getting the uniforms from, but we cannot be part of the problem. Like, this is not what a police station in South Central Los Angeles looks like. Right. Let's fix it. But I definitely, and I only say that to say, I'm sure there's a myriad of ones I didn't mm-hmm. catch, but we all have these blind spots. And for me, I have made peace with the fact that we all have biases. I have a bias towards African, Black, you know, things that represent who I am. And I want to see that on screen. I have blind spots when it comes to Native Americans or Hispanic people, or, you know, as I just gave in that example, women at times. Mm-hmm. And so it's about there being more people, more different kinds of people in positions mm-hmm. of power, whereby we are going to do that normal human thing of pushing our own bias, but there's enough variation that you go, oh, okay, so that we need a bit of that. I didn't spot that, missed that one. But when it's primarily one demographic, that now is going on to just completely dictate what the entire, I mean, it's, you know, Hollywood is such a culturally impactful industry. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that has to be shifted. And that, you know, to your point earlier about my more philanthropic work, that's what also happened when I had three sons. I was one of three boys, and then I had a girl, and my world completely changed. I was just like, oh,
wow,
my gosh, I have a limb. This girl is like my heart walking outside my body around the world. I love all of my children, but there was something so profound about being one of three boys, having three boys, and then having a girl. And so the notion that she could or would be marginalized on the basis of being a girl was something I took incredibly personally. It affected my work choices in terms of certain films I went on to do that centered young, specifically Black girls, where I was in a smaller role in relation to them. That really was like, no, I am producing this film, I know, but this kind of person needs to be front and center because I need to send a message to my daughter. That went on to be the driving force for, you know, the scholarship for girls that we have in Nigeria. And, you know, when that Bring Back Our Girls campaign began with the Boko Haram terrorist attacks in Nigeria, and I, you know, obviously as a Nigerian, but also as a father to a girl, and when the thing that primarily was being denied these girls was education, that's when I just thought, okay, I've got to somehow find a way, again, to be part of the solution, and be a drop in the ocean of saying to those girls that they are of value, their education is necessitous for the continued development of Nigerian culture. Nigeria is a very patriarchal country. And so in my own way, I wanted to be able to just signify to them that for me, I see them, I want to help. And that's how the scholarship for girls began.
That's so beautiful. And what I love about what you're saying is the willingness to acknowledge where our blind spots are doesn't necessarily have to mean something's wrong with you or that you're a bad person. When we are able to grow, you know, the way I think about it is, and talking about our particulars, you know, you as a Black man, me as a white woman, like the people whose experiences I learn about that viscerally affect me and that I can relate to in my own way, I think as I move through my life, those are the people who never leave me. Like when I walk into a room and sometimes I'm the only woman in the room, who else am I carrying with me in my perspective? Who else am I looking for on set? When will I stop and say, hey, have we noticed who's not in this room and should be? And I think it's really special to hear you talk about the inherent experience as a man and a father, one of three boys and a father to boys, you only know what you know until you have a daughter. And then you see the world through her eyes, and suddenly your perspective grows yet again.
Right.
And it makes me think so much about how we've seen consistently, you know, when you talk about the industry we work in or school-age children around the world, when we include more people at the decision-making table, when we around the world center the education of girls, education for boys gets better. When there are more people like us in rooms where decisions are made, projects do better. Companies actually have a better ROI. So having more women and people of color on in your C-suites actually means you're just going to make more money. So it's not simply a moral imperative. It's a smart decision for the forward motion of the world. And having worked on global education for so long, when I read about your work, it felt like someone put a little more oxygen in the room, because it is, I think, a gift for us to be in the most connected generation in history. But it's also something I know causes feelings of helplessness for people around the world, because we hear about what happens to these girls. We hear about this Boko Haram attack. Folks are helping to call attention to it, and Bring Back Our Girls is trending online. And then you go, but what else do we do? Is this enough? And and to have watched what you built and the launch of your foundation, and again, the way you spend the privilege of a platform, not just centering young women on screen and taking a step back, you know, as an actor who's used to being the lead in his projects and saying, I'm going to give up some of this, you know, privilege of how the lines are divvied up here. But to use that platform and say, when I go out and promote, when I have the ear of the biggest talk show hosts in Hollywood, New York, and London, I'm going to talk about these girls. I'm going to let the world know about what the education system in Nigeria looks like and what these girls deserve. Again, I think of the ripple effect that you have, and it really does create a massive shift.
And that's the power, again, of what we do, because the reason I love to do that on screen is for that little white girl in Idaho to feel connection to a little black girl from Uganda who plays chess. And the little girl in Idaho loves chess. And the likelihood that she will ever meet someone like that might be incredibly remote, but there's a connection. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, you know, until you walk in someone's shoes, you don't really know who they are, so to speak. Yeah. And especially in a world that unfortunately has become increasingly divided, ironically, the closer we are by way of proximity, the more divided it seems like we are in some ways. It's extraordinary what can happen when, for whatever reason, you are in the proximity of someone for 2 hours, just 2 hours.
Yes.
And that tends to be around about the time that a film is, or if it's a TV show, you have even longer. And it's extraordinary what can be achieved. I mean, the Girls Scholarship, you know, I have a wonderful relationship with Oprah Winfrey, who I did a film with, and we played mother and son. And it led to me going to her Academy for Girls in South Africa. And 300 South African girls, a lot of whom were coming out of sexual violence, poverty, living in refugee camps, abuse, just every challenge you can imagine. And they're being afforded this opportunity on the basis of their intellect to go to an academy where that will be nurtured into its greatest potential. And Oprah did that because she saw herself reflected in these kids. Her story is one very much rooted in everything I just said.
Yes.
All of those challenges she dealt with, as a young person. And so given the platform, given what she's been blessed with, she recognized what her plus them could equal, not just for South Africa, but for the world. And I went, and it was this sort of incubator for greatness. I just thought, wow, what an amazing thing. And by seeing, again, you cannot be what you cannot see. I went to that academy and I saw what was possible. And that was hundreds of girls. We currently have 45 girls that we put through their education. We're with them for 6 years. Everything is provided, room, board, all the books, all the facilities, all the education. And there's a mental health component because, you know, some of our first girls had literally seen their parents murdered in front of their eyes because they were there in the middle of these terrorist atrocities and things like that. And so you can go in and think, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this great thing and educate them. But it's so far wide and deep what they actually need. But once you know what it is they need and can afford it to them, it's the greatest joy imaginable. But the reason I felt the need to really focus, and this is another thing Oprah taught me. She said, people are going to pull on you left, right, and center to be part of that cause, part of that cause. You're going to erode yourself and you're just going to be tired. Pick one thing and do it to the absolute nth degree and funnel everything into that. And I took that to heart. So girls' education is my thing, and I'm an ambassador for Girl Rising. And then, you know, I have the leadership scholarship for girls. And those 45 girls who we are hoping become hundreds and thousands are my focus. And in focusing on them at a time where the Bring Back Our Girls, I just knew that was going to fall out of the news cycle. I knew the hashtag and all of that, and it did. But it is so meaningful for these girls to know that even though a lot of the world seems to have moved on, certain folks haven't and are here for the long haul. That in and of itself, outside of the actual education of them, just means the world. Because for so many girls, the feeling of being devalued, forgotten, discarded, is the wound. That's the wound you carry, and therefore just it becomes this sort of insurmountable thing in relation to what your actual capabilities are. But to know, more than anything, actually, to know, I remember going to see some of these girls, just going almost meant more than anything else we could afford them. And so that, to feel seen, to feel like you're at the center of a life that is meaningful, you cannot put a dollar number on that. And so what we're trying to do is not just educate girls, but shift the culture in relation to who is valuable, who gets to be a leader. It's very intentional, calling it a leadership scholarship. And so, you know, look, I can go on and on and on, but it's that to me, it's about centering those who are worthy of it, not because they are special, but because they are flesh and blood human beings, traditionally marginalized. As you said earlier, we are all better. There's a reason, there's design in the fact that by and large, wherever you go, 50% of the population are men, 50%. We need each other. Why? Whether it's female directors or actresses or politicians or, you know, all these arenas where women are marginalized, why would we do that when nature itself is telling us there's a yin and a yang to this? You need both sides of this coin. How dumb is it to that? It's like saying to your body, I'm only gonna work out my left side, and that's gonna be great for this body. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
And now a word from our wonderful sponsors. The new Star series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah! I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Well, someone I found thanks to Oprah. Years ago on her podcast, she was doing a Super Soul Sunday with a woman. She's a famous Catholic nun, Sister Joan. She's in her 90s. Wow. And you wouldn't exactly think a Catholic nun is going to be a feminist leader.
Right.
Because, you know, most religious institutions are very patriarchal, let alone the Catholic Church.
Right.
And she said the most profound thing, because Oprah said, I don't understand. Talk to me about how you became a feminist through your faith. And Sister Joan said, we've been letting 50% of the population make 100% of the decisions.
Right. Right.
And you have to have the other 50% if you want to have solutions that work for 100% of the world.
Yeah.
And so I love that you look at your foundation as a way, through its language, through who it centers, to begin to shift and highlight that other 50%. For the folks at home who didn't read every single thing there is to read about it ahead of today's interview like I did, can you give us a quick overview of the year you chose to start it, and to your point, what these programs cover for these 45 girls and how people who are no doubt inspired by our conversation today can get involved? I'd love to set the scene for them in director speak.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, we've been going about 7 years now. So I guess around 2016, around where the Bring Back Our Girls of It All was happening is when we started this. We started with seven girls, I believe, back then. And that we now have 45 girls, and we have four schools across Nigeria, in Northern Nigeria in Jos and Abuja, and then in Eastern Nigeria in Enugu, and then in Western Nigeria in Ibadan in Oyo State. And you know, Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa. One in four Africans is Nigerian, but 20 million kids are out of school. 60% of those are girls, so 12 million girls out of school, and that leaves them vulnerable to child pregnancy. They are often subjected to abusive situations. They are often very much operating beneath their potential from a societal point of view. Very little education when it comes to menstrual care or sex education, or you know, all the things that would keep society healthy, because of them being 50% often is not afforded them. But education being the big one. Nigerian politics is incredibly male-centered. There are so many areas where that's the case. And a lot of this was driven by a study done not a long ago that basically said the way to end world poverty is to educate girls globally.
Yes.
And you know, so what we're taking that to heart. And like I say, we have 45 girls now. We do fundraisers through the year. It's you know, I'll say it freely. I put a lot of my own personal money into it to keep these girls in school. We have a bunch of celebrities who are friends of mine, and Chiwetel Ejiofor, who has supported this as well, to help with the fundraising. But you know, what we started in 2016, 2017, you know, we wanted to get to the point where we clearly are not just a foundation or a scholarship that's just flavor of the month. You know, we had this cause, and we're celebrities, and we're going to do this thing, and before we know it, we get bored and we move on. So, you know, gosh, I think it's more than 7 years now that we've actually been going. And so we're established. What's beautiful that's happening is some of the girls who have gone through our program are now going back and educating the new girls coming in.
Oh my gosh.
To the scholarship, you know, which is just, that is as satisfying a situation as you can find, because that is just simply, there's no way that's happening without the hard work that so many people are putting in to give these girls the kind of self-esteem that they now feel able to pay forward into the next generation. So we are really hopeful that we are gonna now be able to get corporate sponsors that can give us that security of, you know, 5-year sponsorship, so that we can go into having hundreds of girls going through our program, thousands of girls, because if we have thousands of scholars, you are shifting the notion of Nigeria being a patriarchal society. And because you're raising up leaders. And when we talk to them, we say, you owe us a debt. You owe us a debt of going out there and being your absolute best self. Yes. And it's not something we do in a dogmatic way, but it's in an encouraging way of we are giving you the platform to lead. We want you to lead. We are challenging you to lead, mm-hmm. not to be on the periphery. That's why you were given a leadership scholarship. We have a rigorous way of picking the girls who we give these scholarships to. And so our hope is to get to a point whereby having girls as leaders across Nigeria becomes the norm.
Yeah.
And that others will replicate it all over mm-hmm. the what is Nigeria, which is such a populous country. And so, you know, if people want to join us on this quest, that's so funny.
Is Oprah calling?
That's Oprah. That's Oprah calling me.
No.
Oh gosh! See, this is how much I value you. I'm ignoring Oprah for you.
I love it. I'm so flattered.
Mama was just calling me. Anyway, so yes, and she's the partly the inspiration for all of this. That was kind of perfect. She's gonna find that so funny.
Oh, it's so cool.
So anyway, yeah, geneco.org is where people can go to join us in this quest, and yeah, we'd love to have them.
Wonderful. It's so very cool. And I just have to say personally, you know, I've spent most of my career traveling around the world to talk to schoolgirls and open primary schools and talk to families and visit with people whose lives are changed by education. And it's beautiful to hear about girls who've gone through your program coming back to reinvest in the program. And it's like, as you were talking, I was imagining, you know, like when you do that, those connect the dot sort of pieces of artwork, like all these little dots going out and moving across the country and thinking about these girls becoming executives and politicians and just like what's happened in the last 7 years and what'll happen in the next seven and the seven after that. It's really magnificent.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I think if we all take up the challenge to be a drop in the ocean of goodness, mm-hmm. I know that can sound a little saccharine and corny, but I really, really believe it. That's the way we move the needle on, I think, what all of humanity really wants and needs. Yeah. We can end world poverty if we just focus on educating girls globally. You know, there's so many of the challenges we face would be eroded by us just doing what, like I say, working both sides of the body to keep the whole body strong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, geanco.org is how people can join us in this quest, geanco.org. And, you know, it's the thing I've devoted my life to. I think anyone out there who's listening and who's wondering, because I completely agree with you. And I felt that feeling of paralysis of like, oh, there's just so many bad things. How can one be, you know, I gave that $50, I gave that $100, but I still feel like, is that mm-hmm. enough? You know, I would take Oprah's advice and just like pick a thing mm-hmm. and just give it your all. And actually by picking a thing, you also have to be disciplined about saying no to other things.
Yeah.
So that you can be focused and effective and productive and not get overwhelmed and exhausted. And if you feel bad about that thing you're having to say no to, feel free to say to that person, look, I'm focused on this thing over here, but you know, you keep going with your thing and hopefully we'll all do our things really well and it'll all join up to add to a mountain of goodness. And so, you know, it's really helped me to find that focus, because I just found myself just feeling paralyzed into a state of inertia, and it's been as much a blessing for me as I hope it has been for these girls. It just mm-hmm. You know, you get out of bed every day, especially in our crazy profession that can be so self-centered inducing, just to do something beyond that.
Yeah, do you think it's sunk in for your daughter that she really inspired all of this? Does she know yet?
She's 11. And I don't know, but there's a way she hugs me There's a way she hugs me when we talk about this stuff that makes me know she recognizes it. You know, it's sort of nonverbal at this point, which is, I think, right for an 11-year-old. You know, yeah, there are movies I've literally done because of her, and I know she's very proud of them, and they're her favorite movies of mine. She completely ignores everything else I do.
That feels right for an 11-year-old. She's almost a teenager. She's supposed to ignore you a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I guess the short answer is it's less about in the moment. It's more a legacy thing for me. You know, I really want to be part of helping manifest a world in which she doesn't have to face some of the challenges her mom faced, or, or certainly, you know, mixed race girls like her have had to face, or black girls have had to face, or girls generally have had to face, because the world spun a little bit more on its axis because daddy, you know, tried to do a couple of things that she inspired. So I think my happiest moments are going to be probably deep into my dotage, just going, wow, look at her go. And I hope I helped encourage her towards taking flight.
Undoubtedly. And I also would be remiss not to say I know that what your boys are learning by watching the way their father stands up for their sister will cause incredible ripple effects in their lives as well. Because we need more boys like you too.
I really appreciate you saying that. And yes, we focus a lot on my girl because of the scholarship, but I truly, truly believe that. You know, sometimes men will say to me, gosh, wow, so you're doing this girls scholarship thing? Like, why girls? And it's because I truly believe that it needs to be prioritized for men, because I think that also sends a message around the need for men to value women and their contribution to society. And yeah, my boys are, I will say I'm blessed with boys who are very mindful of that. It's something my wife and I have tried to cultivate, but, you know, stepping away from the objectification of women, the disrespect of women, the marginalization and devaluing of women is something that we just do not stand for in my household, because again, with that thing of feeling incapable of being contributive, because it's also big, you start with your own household and you're already doing something pretty major. So yes, thank you for saying that, and I've seen it to be true. They are wonderful, wonderful young men, and I guess are living out what I hope they've seen exemplified for them.
Well, you and your wife have been together, what is it, 25 years now?
We're married 25 years. We've been together 27.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys are probably setting a pretty cool example. In your house. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, she's wonderful, my wife. Yeah. Really, really amazing woman.
Well, I'm just so thrilled that I got to ask you all of these questions today. I look forward to a non-strike time when we can also talk about the exciting things you're doing on screen. But it's so meaningful, and I know will be so inspirational for our audience, and certainly has been for me. So thank you for taking the time to share about the foundation and about your journey.
Thank you. Thanks, Sophia, for giving me the time. And isn't it great that we can have a nice, robust conversation that isn't centered on, you know, just the work we do, but the work we do enables us to do. That's a real blessing as well. So thank you. This has been wonderful.
Yeah. Well, this is. Oh, thank you. This is the real beauty of life stuff. You know, I always joke that anyone who comes on my show joins Team Emo. I'm like, you want to come talk about feelings and purpose? Let's go.
Right.
So I'm glad to have you on the team.
You had me tearing up twice. I don't do that on podcasts. So no. I'm trying to be a butch leading man over here. For goodness sake, Sophia.
Well, thank you.
But no, this was great.
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
The new Starz series, Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.